This is Success Journal Podcast number 13. I'm Chris Whitting, and coming up on this episode, is email wasting your life? We'll have startling facts and figures, along with ways to reduce the emails you deal with. Then, the master of influence and persuasion, Robert Cialdini, reveals the surprising secrets of persuasion.
When I find myself being persuaded, I'm saying to myself, what did the persuader do immediately before delivering their message?
And a factory worker's mistake accidentally creates a multi-million dollar product. Plus, how powerful are your thoughts? We'll talk to a researcher who says mindset may determine your risk of premature death.
A person who has a positive mindset about their physical activity might also in general tend to be a more positive person overall.
And a marketer sells an energy drink and gives his income a big jolt. Success Journal starts right now. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/successjournal. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
The Success Journal Podcast. Informative advice from leading experts. Helpful, practical tips to enhance your career, your income, and your personal freedom. The Success Journal Podcast with Chris Whitting.
Well, we're already at the middle of summer, and I hope you're enjoying it and finding some time for relaxation, or better yet, an actual summer vacation. You know, when I was a kid, my family vacations were memorable. We rarely went anyplace fancy, just to a lake cottage or someplace off the beaten track, and we would relax as a family for a week or two. As an adult, I haven't been very good at taking vacations, but this month, I'm going to take a few days off to visit some old friends for a long overdue visit. There's kind of a morbid joke about what adults say to their old friends. They say, "We've got to get together sometime." And they each say that phrase back and forth to each other until they both die. Well, I'm not going to let that happen. I'm actually going to visit some friends, and I hope you find the time this summer to enjoy a bit of relaxation too. First up on the podcast is email. Is email wasting your life? This figure is startling to me. Research shows about 40% of the average person's workday is spent on email and related activities, such as filing, searching, and responding. 40%! The more emails you send out, it turns out, the more that you get. In one study, people reduced the number of emails they sent out by 20%, and it automatically reduced the emails coming in by 10%, and that can save you a lot of time. And reducing your outgoing emails is easy. For example, if you're emailing jokes and funny videos, well, that's easy to cut back on. And if you're emailing somebody sitting 5 feet away, maybe you should just go talk to them. That information courtesy of author Mike Song. Well, have you ever had someone convince you to do something you never, ever thought you'd agree to? Maybe a super salesman or saleswoman convinced you to spend twice as much as you wanted to spend, maybe on a new car or something. Later, you said to yourself, "What made me agree to that?" Well, chances are you were not only persuaded, you were also persuaded. And the master of this science is going to join us today, Robert Cialdini. If you want to learn how to use this science to get people to do things you never thought they'd do, or if you want to defend yourself against it, well, you're going to learn how today in our interview. But first, how about a 60-second Success Journal story about a factory worker's mistake that created a multi-million dollar product? When it comes to inventing unique cleaning products, most companies say no soap. The fact is, most cleaning stuff is pretty boring. One company decided the soapy stuff was so basic, they sold it using the brand name White Soap. That is, till a mistake in the factory changed everything. A worker overmixed the soap before hardening it into bars. And before long, customers were calling, asking where they could get more of that amazing soap. After testing the stuff, the puzzled company realized that tiny air bubbles in the soap were making it float. They renamed the product, and it became a top seller. Well, you know the soap, created by a poorly trained factory worker, Ivory. Ivory soap still has buoyant sales. Whether you realize it or not, advertisers, salespeople, and others are constantly trying to persuade you. Our next guest is a real expert in the field. He's social psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. Robert Cialdini. Your latest book is titled Persuasion, A Revolutionary Way to Influence and Persuade. So, persuasion says it's not so much about the message, but what happens just before the message is delivered. Is that right?
Yes. Persuasion describes the process of gaining agreement with a message before it's been sent. Now, that may sound like some form of magic, but it's not. It's established science.
Could you give us an example or two of how that works?
Surely. For example, in one study, when researchers approached individuals and asked for help with a marketing survey, only 29% agreed to participate. But if the researchers approached a second sample and preceded their request with a simple, persuasive question, "Do you consider yourself a helpful person?" Now, when asked, 77% volunteered to participate. Why? Because when asked before the request if they were helpful, nearly everyone answered yes. Then, when the request occurred, most agreed to participate in order to be consistent with the recently activated idea of themselves as helpful people.
Now, would you say those people were aware that they had been persuaded, or did they just accept it as just their natural behavior?
They were not aware, and let me give you one more study that shows that point. On a furniture store, an online furniture store website, the researchers sent visitors to a landing page that had either fluffy clouds in the background or coins. Those who were directed to the website with fluffy clouds depicted then became more interested in learning about comfortable furniture and preferred to purchase comfortable furniture. Those who were directed to the website with coins became more interested in furniture for which price was the most important feature, and they preferred to purchase inexpensive furniture. Now, when asked afterwards, none of them thought that they had been influenced by the clouds or coins. They were sure that they had made those decisions completely on their own, when in fact, simply drawing their attention to the concept of comfort or the concept of price immediately before they encountered the information determined how they searched that information and what they valued inside of it, completely without their recognition.
If I want to convince someone to do something, is there a formula that I can apply for persuasion, or is it going to be specific to each situation?
Yes, it's going to be specific depending on what your goal is. Let's say you're applying for a new job. What we typically do when we go into an interview situation is say to the evaluator, "I'm very glad that you invited me here, and I want to answer all your questions." Right? Now, here's what I'm going to recommend we say in addition. "But, you know, before we begin, there's a question I'd like you to answer for me. Why did you invite me to interview today? What was it about my qualifications that attracted you to my candidacy? And Chris, you know what? I've got an acquaintance who says what happens is the evaluator now starts looking at the strengths of your record. And in that mindset, has a very positive attitude to adopt to your candidacy for the rest of the interview. He claims, my acquaintance, that he's gotten 3 straight jobs this way."
That's brilliant. Can a consumer learn a way to defend themselves against this technique?
Yes, it's one that I've learned now, which is to say, when I find myself being persuaded in some direction in a way that was really very powerful, and I'm saying to myself, wow, suddenly I'm on board with this idea or this product, I ask myself, what did the persuader do immediately before delivering their message? In other words, how did they create a frame of mind in me that would be favorable to their message before I even knew it was going to occur?
So this is something that you can learn to do. I guess you really have to be observant in order to apply this, though.
Exactly. And some of the things are so subtle that you have to be willing to recognize what happens first. Let's say that you've got a new plan and you want your colleague or maybe even your boss to support this plan. Typically, what we do is to show the boss the outline or the blueprint or the draft of our idea and ask for his or her opinion, right? That's a mistake. When you ask for someone's opinion, that person takes a half step back from you psychologically and separates and goes into themselves. Here's what you say instead of asking for their opinion about your idea. Ask for their advice about your idea. With that as the frame, people go into a collaborative, cooperative, partnership mindset. And they become more favorable to your idea because they feel more part of it.
Your first book, titled Influence, a major business bestseller, as these techniques and ideas become more and more well known, are they going to become less effective or not?
Well, you know, this is the thing about persuasion. It happens to fly under the radar so often that people don't even recognize that it's happening. So my guess is that we have to train ourselves to be aware of those strategies before we're likely to be susceptible to it. But that's a tough road. I think it's actually scary what these techniques can produce. So we have to insist that people inside our organizations only use these strategies in ethical ways.
Yeah, you mentioned in your book examples in history where these techniques have been used. One that's a little amusing is about the introduction of the Volkswagen bug. Can you share that with us?
Yeah, back in the late 1950s, early 1960s, you know, the U.S. car buyer was interested in great big boat-like automobiles. And then the Volkswagen organization came into the country with this little oddly shaped bug of a car, completely against the way that we were buying cars in those days. And their advertising agency did something brilliant to get people's attention to the value of a Volkswagen, the reliability, the economy, the availability of parts that they had in a network of dealers and so on. They began each of their ads by saying something you would never expect an advertiser to say. For example, we're ugly, but we get you there. Or, ugly is only skin deep. That was such an arresting thing to see at the beginning, at the top of every ad, that people looked inside now with a mindset that, oh, these people are being straight with us. This is an honest broker of information. I can believe the next thing that they say. And that advertising campaign is rated as the single greatest advertising campaign of all time in the United States. It cracked the U.S. market for compact cars.
Well, as we wrap this up, Bob, I'm wondering if you have any last words for our listeners in terms of how they can be aware that they are being persuaded and perhaps protect themselves against it.
I'm going to repeat something I said a little bit earlier, and that is, with persuasion, the traction, the leverage that the persuader gets over us is not in the message itself. It's in the moment before they deliver their message. So our attention has to be shifted to that moment to be sure that we're being treated ethically there.
The book is Persuasion, A Revolutionary Way to Influence and Persuade. The author, Dr. Robert Cialdini. And you can learn more at his website, influenceatwork.com. Dr. Cialdini, thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, I enjoyed it.
Still ahead on Success Journal, how the right mindset can help you avoid unexpected death. And a man creates an energy drink, and it gives his income a real jolt. For you, the listeners of the Success Journal podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. And there's a great book I want to recommend wholeheartedly to you. It could easily be called life-changing, yet it's been around for decades. And when I tell you it was written by Dale Carnegie, you'll probably assume I'm talking about How to Win Friends and Influence People. No, that is not it. The book I think is much more powerful is titled How to Stop Worrying and Start Living. How to Stop Worrying and Start Living by Dale Carnegie. It is old school, but it is packed with brilliant, time-tested advice that's going to hit you right between the ears. And the audiobook is unabridged, narrated by the late, great Andrew McMillan. And you can get the audiobook, How to Stop Worrying and Start Living, or any other book you want, absolutely free. Just go to audibletrial.com/successjournal. That's audibletrial.com/successjournal. The way you answer a simple question could impact your risk of premature death, according to a recent study. Here to explain is the co-author of the study, Stanford scholar Octavia Zart, a doctoral candidate at the Stanford University Graduate School of Business. She's the co-author of the study with Alia Crum. Octavia, what is that question that could impact someone's risk of premature death?
The question is, do you think that you are physically more active, less active, or about as active as other persons your age?
We already know from research that staying active will help us to extend our lifespan, but your study indicates there's another factor involved. But before we get to the results of the study, what led you to conduct this research? I understand there's a little story behind that.
Yes, this research is actually based on my personal experience coming from Europe, where I'm from, to California to go to Stanford as a graduate student. I came here and suddenly I was surrounded by all of these incredibly active people. The stereotype is true about people in Silicon Valley that they work out all the time. They all wear exercise clothes all day, basically. And so before, when I lived in London, I always felt really good about my activity level and I felt pretty healthy. But then when I came here and I started comparing myself to the Silicon Valley people, I started feeling much worse about my activity level and I had a really negative mindset about it. And it was around that same time when I took a health psychology class with my professor, Alia Crum, and I learned that these mindsets and perceptions about my physical activity level might actually influence my actual health outcomes. So we started talking about this and working on the study together.
So we know that the mind is very powerful, but I don't think anyone realized that just your perception of how physically active you are would really have that big an effect on your body. Were you surprised by this finding?
We actually went into the study expecting that we might find some differences in mortality by these perceptions. And the reason why we thought that is because in the past several years, there's been a lot of medical and psychological research documenting these really powerful effects that our mindsets can have. So, for example, there's one really cool study by my advisor, Alia Crum, who went to a hotel and interviewed hotel room attendants about their level of physical activity. And obviously, hotel room attendants are really active just because of their day-to-day work. But she found that lots of these people had negative mindsets about their activity and didn't perceive themselves as active at all. And so she then changed their mindsets and told them that actually their daily work counted as good activity. Then a month later, she was able to measure some physiological health benefits that these room attendants got out of just this mindset shift. And there's lots of other examples in the literature as well that show that mindset can be really influential. So we weren't all that surprised that we found the effect that we found. We were perhaps a little surprised about how big the differences were. But yeah, not overall surprised.
Since you mentioned that, how big were the differences?
We looked at three different data sets, and the effect sizes varied a bit between those data sets. But the biggest effect that we found in one of them was a 71% increase in the risk of mortality for people who thought that they were much less active compared to people who thought they were more active.
I guess it's a known fact in medicine that placebos will work. If you take a pill that contains nothing, but the doctor says it's going to cure you, it actually might cure you because of your mental thinking about it. Is that the same factor that's happening here with the way you think of your activity levels?
Yeah, so the placebo effect is definitely one of the mechanisms that we think might be going on. I just want to emphasize that this particular study actually wasn't able to test which mechanisms are behind these effects. And also, this study is not documenting a causal effect. So we see this link across more than 60,000 people between perceptions and mortality, but we can't actually say for sure that it was a causal relationship. Just sort of in combination with prior research, we think that there might be a causal relationship going on. But then, yeah, to your placebo question, we absolutely think that part of the benefits that you get from exercise could be a placebo effect. So if you believe that you're getting good exercise, then you might benefit more from that exercise than if you believe that you aren't actually getting exercise.
Our guest is Stanford scholar Octavia Zart, a doctoral candidate at the Stanford University Graduate School of Business, who co-authored this study about mindset apparently affecting potentially your health and your lifespan. Octavia, is there any way that someone could apply these findings to themselves to perhaps convince themselves that they're healthier than they are?
Yeah, I think these findings have really important implications for many people. Many people think that the only healthy physical activity is vigorous exercise that they can get in a gym or by running on a track. And this kind of vigorous hard exercise is off-putting to many people who think that they can't motivate themselves to get all of this hard exercise. And so what I think lots of people can start doing is just being more mindful of the everyday activities that they are already doing as part of their lifestyles. For example, not underestimating the importance of just walking to the store or taking the stairs or carrying around your kids or cleaning the house. All of these things count as physical activity. And if we can be more mindful of them and have a positive mindset about them, this might simultaneously be more motivating for us to get more exercise. And it might also unlock some of these physiological benefits through a placebo effect that we might not otherwise get.
You used a phrase about positive mindset, and I recall seeing a study somewhere that said that having a positive attitude in general will help you to live longer. Do you think that's a factor here? As opposed to the fitness angle, maybe it's just the positive mode of thinking.
Yeah, I think that those two things could be connected to one another. So a person who has a positive mindset about their physical activity might also in general tend to be a more positive person overall. And both of these things might independently have positive effects on health. In our current study, we actually had a couple of factors in our analyses that controlled for other kinds of perceptions. So for example, we used the question, how good is your health in general, where people could indicate more general positive perceptions about their health. And we also accounted for things like mental health status. So we think that being just a positive person is not the only thing that is going on in our effects, but it could definitely be part of it.
Are you planning any other research in this area? Any specific studies you can talk about?
Yeah, we're planning a follow-up study right now where we use physical activity trackers to directly manipulate people's perceptions about their physical activity level so that we can actually isolate the causal effect of physical activity perceptions on health outcomes. So for a short period of time, something like 4 or 5 weeks, people will be wearing these trackers, and so we can measure exactly how much people are moving around. We'll survey them every day about their mindsets and their perceptions. And through the physical activity feedback, we can actually sort of nudge them towards thinking that they're more active or less active. And so that study, we hope, will be able to show how mindsets are causally connected to health outcomes. And it will help us determine also how much of the effects are due to placebo and how much of it is due to behavior change or just general positive outlook.
Just out of curiosity, the word mindsets, it's not a word that we often hear. How would you define that?
A mindset in general is the psychological lens through which people perceive themselves and their environment. And a mindset on health specifically is sort of the way in which people think about their health and their health behaviors.
So if you do perhaps affirmations or other ways to alter your mindset, that can have, I guess, many different positive effects.
Yes, interventions that change mindsets can be really powerful because, again, they don't only change one particular type of belief or behavior, but they change our whole outlook and our whole perspective through which we perceive our everyday lives and activities and our contexts. So, yeah, just changing your mindset in a small way can have really great trickle-down consequences in all kinds of areas of our lives.
Do you have any last thoughts for us in terms of the study you did and the results for our listeners?
Yeah, so I just want to underline that many people, of course, know about the great benefits that you can get out of exercising regularly and having a healthy diet and trying to avoid too much stress. But lots of people don't know that their mindsets and perceptions about all of these health behaviors can also have a big impact and can actually enhance or minimize the effects that they get out of these healthy behaviors. So just encourage everyone to be more mindful of their mindsets and trying to just be more positive about them.
Stanford scholar Octavia Zartz, a doctoral candidate at the Stanford University Graduate School of Business, who co-authored this fascinating study. Octavia, we want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, how about a 60-second Success Journal story now about a marketer who sells an energy drink and gives his income a big jolt? A young man named Dietrich thought marketing would be a cool career, so he studied it in college. Next, he sold consumer products all over the globe. A chance meeting with an Asian man led him to try an energy drink, which were all the rage then in the Far East. Figuring America and Europe would also gulp down a drink that gave them a jolt, Dietrich quit his marketing job to start an energy drink company. It was not an instant success, but he stuck with it. And today, Dietrich Mateschitz's company sells billions of cans a year. His drink product was originally named after a water buffalo, but clever Dietrich changed it to a name I'm sure you know, Red Bull. His Red Bull drink has made Dietrich an energetic billionaire, and that's no bull. You know, we welcome your comments and your ideas at our official Facebook page, Success Journal Podcast. And we'd love to have you follow us there, too. Again, it's Success Journal Podcast on Facebook. Next time, we're excited to have mega entrepreneur Mark Victor Hansen joining us. That should be a good one. Until then, this is Chris Whitting for Success Journal, wishing you a highly successful day.